Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Well, hello, Andrew Main. How are you?
Fantastic. And Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends.
Gentlemen, it's 2024.
Hey, we slayed the dragon, the 2023 dragon. It's dead. And now we get to live anew.
What was it in Logan's Run? It was Carousel Renew.
Carousel
Renew.
Renew.
Yeah. It was a lie.
Yeah, those of you who don't know, I think it was John Brunner who wrote the book. In the book Logan's Run, it was like a society. I think that they end a life to you. You know, I killed like at 21, and I think for the movie they changed it to 30.
because there weren't enough talented actors that were under the age. Yeah,
pretty much. You know, Michael York's interested. Ah, bad news. Listen. Yeah. But it was one of those. It was a. I'm gonna look that up, see if that was John Brunner. But anyhow, it was this genre of fiction that became popular in the 60s and 70s. You had Make Room by Harry Harrison, which became Soylent Green, because, you know, we were convinced that, you know, we were going to have this, you know, because we're watching population post-World War II population go up. We were watching the
Tonight Show with Paul Ehrlich, William constantly talking about this. Yeah.
William F. Nolan and George Clayton Johnson wrote Logan's Run. I was completely wrong on that. The population's increasing, etc. And yeah, that was like people thought like you had those, you know, Club of Rome and all these statistics and stuff about that. And so fiction was like, you know, Clockwork Orange is about like a fear of young people. And
like, did I already spin for you my yarn about Clockwork Orange? I think we talked about it on here. Did you know that A Clockwork Orange has two different versions? One in America, one in England, and they both have different lessons at the end. Have we talked about this?
Mm-hmm. No.
So the version in England is, first of all, the protagonist of A Clockwork Orange, Alex DeLonge, is 15 years old, which...
This is the book or the movie?
The book. The book. I think in the movie, he's supposed to be the same character, right?
But
we're two different versions.
There we go.
Yes, correct. And when it was released in, well, I'll tell the American version first. There's a lot of delightful linguistic tricks that they do. The type of language that they speak, you know, real horror show, Tolchak on the Gulliver, a little bit of the old In Out and Out, ultra violence, all that stuff. That's some slang that Alex Burgess wrote, and they, much like Dune and other stories, they included a glossary at the end so you could understand what the heck is any of this. So I recently went back and listened to the audiobook and the Audible version. In fact, this will be my pick at the end. The Audible version, the guy is so good at internalizing the rhythm and flow that even though they're all nonsense words, you know what he's saying. You're talking about, I stole this money from this old woman, even though he uses none of those words. The English version had a redemption arc at the end. And it was about how, the lesson of the English version was essentially, teenagers be all fired up, but eventually they calm down and they become your parents. And in fact, this whole ending chapter, which I kid you not, brought me to tears, was about how, you know, because Alex gets cured of the terrible, you know, torture that he's gone through, and he goes back to the gangster lifestyle, but then he's bored by it and he begins to have this weird thought, like, maybe I'll settle down with someone and make a baby. And you know what? Yeah, that baby's going to think I'm a dumb, boring, old, normal person. But I guess that's the way of it all, isn't it? And then he does. So it's a story of redemption. Whereas in America, who was going through the Vietnam War, they were like, well, you can't have this bow at the end. It has to be a story about science run amok, torturing someone. And then he finally gets back his feral instincts. And the book ends with, oh, I was back. All right. And then that is the version that became the movie that we all know. I was really blown away by the difference between those two.
Yeah, reading about his Anthony Burgess's opinions on that, and in fact, he actually was sort of ambivalent. He's apparently, when he wrote a screenplay, his own screenplay version, that he left out that end chapter and left it where it was on a darker tone. So,
well, and he in the foreword for, I believe it's the early 1990s version, he said some version of, yeah, the only thing I didn't love about this book is spending 20 years defending it. But it's a great audiobook read. Like the audiobook, if you look at the Amazon reviews, I think the physical book has like 4 stars, but the audiobook has 5 stars, and it is purely because the lyrical, it's fascinating to know exactly what they mean without them ever having to say it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about a ending where the murderous rapist gets redeemed and gets to live a normal life.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it's not a redemption. It's almost a more cynical ending that, yeah, like, yes, these are your parents. Like, this person, that they become the power structure, and yes, they don't want to go out and do it right now, but they did do it, and maybe they didn't pay the price they should have.
Yeah, well, and you're right. I'm not going to say well, I mean, first of all, I guess it is a little bit of redemption.
You heard it here. Brian says murder is okay.
Well, that's the other thing.
As long as you procreate,
is all the crimes are petty crimes. There's only one murder, and it's an accidental manslaughter. Now, yes, there is a lot of rape, and that's terrible. That's worse. But it's, I don't know. It's fascinating. I highly recommend listening to the audiobook of the English version, just because it is a subversion of what we know that story as.
Mm-hmm. So as we look back at that genre, remember the movie Silent Running?
I don't think I ever saw it.
Silent Running was directed by Douglas Trumbull, who later on did Brainstorm. Silent Running was at Bruce Dern, and basically it's this spacecraft that has the last forests on Earth have now been put into space, sent off into space because Earth is too polluted, and they got these spacecraft, and he's kind of like hanging out talking to these robots and stuff. And the idea is, you know, we're going to destroy our environment so much so that we're just going to be able to, we just have to go launch all the remaining trees into space. It's another
makes sense.
Strax.
Super. It's crazy. I haven't seen that. Another. It's there's this trend, like the cliche and like eco. There was a one where that William Dafoe trying to hunt down like the last Tasmanian tiger, and then like this. I'll spoil the ending for it, but like they need the spaceships back or whatever, and he decides just to like blow everything up. And it's just like, and there's a thing, there's like the William Dafoe hunting a Tasmanian tiger, where he decides to kill it to prevent it from being captured or something. It's weird. Like, I don't quite get this. But yeah, they're very nihilistic.
This is around what time in human times?
Oh, Silent Running.
That
probably
would have been early
2024.
80s, oh, really?
The movie came out in the '70s.
Okay, yeah.
The movie was like 1976. Look at Silent Running. 1972.
You know, that's one of those things that I say a lot in the political world whenever we talk about things being particularly chaotic or toxic. I always point to like, hey, you know, like, we were averaging 2 American leaders assassinated per 5 years for most of the 60s. Like, we were killing these people at a pretty high clip. we did get through it, but you look at some of the art that came of people that grew up through the 60s into the 70s, and there is just this like deep, deep cynicism of like, maybe we're not cut out to run the planet. Maybe we're the bad guys. That is a theme that emerges.
I almost certainly will be getting this wrong, but I want to say that like in the 1970s, there were 2,000 bombings a year.
Like people were exploding bombs in towns, not like military bombing.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Like acts of terrorism. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, some European countries are catching up on that now with the bombings, the grenade attacks. So
yeah, you know, one time, our friend Darren Kitchen, who lived across the street from the Oakland courthouse, watched a bomb go off and it didn't even get reported on the news.
What?
Yeah, it was during one of the riots. I forget which. It was the pandemic. It was a thing to do at the time.
Everybody was a little bit kooky.
Everybody. Well, yeah, this was when riots were super rad and everybody was high fiving. But yeah, bomb just goes off in City Hall and it didn't even make the news. It was just like, well, I guess we'll replace some windows.
Wow. Stuff be crazy. So now we look at where we're headed and we realize population decrease is a real thing. It's a real factor. You know, the depopulation.
Our fertility rates dropping.
I think part of it, yeah. I mean, yeah, we're just not, you know, not replacement. There's a point where we were going to reach where we're not going to be able to replace ourselves. And it's funny because I'll get in conversations, and I maybe have this too. People are like, well, what's good? And I'm like, oh, people like, you know, I've talked to people like, well, I think we should have fewer people. I'm like, well, why are you here? I'm like, that always baffles me. That you know, should be fewer people. Okay, who?
Yeah.
Start. Naming
who
names.
Goes?
Start telling
who stays, who goes.
Yeah,
who gets voted off the planet?
Yeah, and then you know, some couples, they don't want to have kids or whatever, you know, choose not to have kids, which is fine. But I'm like, well, we just feel like in this. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't feel like it's a logically thought through conclusion.
Well, I would agree with you that I don't think that cynicism should drive your decisions, especially for us right now in this country at this time. If anyone's going to do well for the next 100 years, we're among the list, right? You know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know something that's going to totally shake up everything. But based on everything we know now, we're going to be okay. You'd want to be American amongst other people that would make that top 10 list. So cynicism out and out is, I think, that's wrong. That's I try to fight against that. If anything, the two things that I try to, especially in the fields that I'm in, like politics, I really, really, really actively try to fight against cynicism and fatalism. That, like, there are weird things about our system. There are quirks in everybody else's beliefs. But the wholesale, you know, hugging and believing in this fatalist concept that nothing matters and we're all going to die and that kind of stuff, I think is just corrosive in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, people decide the number of kids, it's fine. I just meant the whole idea of like, because the earth, the world, or where it's going, I'm like, it's kind of never been better to be a person. Never better to be a kid. You know, it's like, it's just, but yeah, we're so shaped by the world around us. But and I will say is that, you know, and we are always nostalgic for a past that doesn't exist. You know, I've had a conversation with somebody at dinner, some politician from 50 years ago. Oh, they were a great guy. I'm like, are you kidding? Like that person was worse than somebody we had today.
Yeah.
It's just, you didn't know, you know, you just bought into whatever, you know, description of this stuff. I said, if this person was around today, like, I don't think they would have been electable. And it's like, and you just realize that, like, that the hazy filter of which we look at the past.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, look, I got into this conversation about media that like, oh, well, today the media is terrible. Like, we long for the days of a Walter Cronkite. And it's like, the day that Kennedy got assassinated, he insinuated on live television to a captivated, rapt audience that Barry Goldwater killed him. Like, that's a thing that happened to the point where people were slamming on Barry Goldwater's campaign offices before more information came out. But in that vacuum, there was an insinuation that this was Barry Goldwater's fault. And it's like, that's horrendously irresponsible. Like, that's a level of irresponsibility that Twitch streamers get in trouble for, like, in 2024, let alone a guy who was talking to a third of the country at any given moment, probably more because they had a greater market share.
He did have a great voice, though.
Yeah, it's one thing that's really poorly understood, because we go like, oh, I liked it back. I'm like, there are people that love the whoever is doing the whoever the premier broadcaster in North Korea is, you know, who think this guy's great and comforting and stuff. Like, yeah, it's because you just, what you don't know, what you don't know. And not to turn this into some, you know, Noam Chomsky anti-media sort of thing, but it is literally, we have the most resolution. We have a lot of resolution about the past, but we choose not to use it. We have very little resolution on the present and just make it fill up that gap with assumptions.
Yeah.
So
I think, no, but things are good. 2024 is going to be rad. It's going to be cool. People are going to smile a lot. You're going to laugh a lot with your friends. You're going to make some goals. You're going to check them off. This is going to be a great year. And if there's challenges, congratulations. It'll be like every other year where you have challenges. Sometimes they're greater, sometimes they're lesser, but we're going to get through it. We're doing awesome. If you're listening to us right now, congratulations. You're at the height of humanity. please try to enjoy it.
I'd like to think so. I was at a New Year's Eve party and I was talking to a woman who said, oh yeah, my husband would like to meet you. He's a portfolio manager and he handles AI stuff. And I'm like, oh, cool. ... Yeah. And he says 2024 is going to be a great year. I'm like, okay, as a fund manager say this? He goes, yeah, because he's really into feng shui and he says the numbers are good for 2024.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. All right.
Like, oh my God, and he's a fund manager.
Take it back.
I think I've told this story before, but I was at a Reason conference, and I'm at this like party outdoor gathering, and everybody's talking, and there's this one very tall, charismatic guy, and he's telling a story about the overreach of the federal government, which is a thing that happens when you're at Reason meetings. That is something that just comes up. Yeah. And he starts talking about, oh, well, you know, here's they carry monetary policy and the intelligence overreach and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm in my like mid-20s at this point. I'm like, man, that makes a lot of sense. And he goes, and that's why they killed Kennedy. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, God, jeez. I was having a good time here, and now I got to go review the tape over everything you said. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because they had some of the Epstein names came out yesterday.
And fewer surprises than the media would lead us to think on that.
I would say, too, that, like, I don't want to veer too politically here, but I would say that, like, there are a number of people in, I'd say, conservative media who are saying, oh, you know, well, they didn't give you the full list. There's more there. I'm like, man, this sounds a lot like the whole Russia things with Trump allegations.
Yeah.
Like, that side's going, oh, yeah, there's a lot more that didn't come out. And here, like, I'm like, you're kind of saying the same thing about this.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought, like, I haven't read the whole unredacted information that came out, but the stuff I read was like, I don't know, matters to me when you put that stuff in context and you put names next to acts and things that happen. I mean, we knew a lot of the names. I don't think that there was anything that we were like what? Like Pat Sajak? Like I mean, I guess maybe there were a few.
Boy, that would have now we've besmirched Pat Sajak.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there were some like Hollywood people that I didn't know, but they weren't stars at the time. They the intervening time in between, they made a career. But I think it matters. I thought it was important for that stuff to be released because it matters to see Prince Andrew's name with things that he did. Like that's, I like those sentences, those full and complete sentences, as opposed to saying all this stuff happened, separate paragraph, here are names linked to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Put them together.
Better, the context is much better because it's like, because there was, you know, I'd heard names like, oh, Epstein. I'm like, well, you know, I knew people who knew him because he was in this, taking scientists out to dinner and giving grants and stuff to orgs and stuff, you know, and, you know, then kind of that the insinuation, my favorite is like some people who hate Elon Musk will show this photo of Elon Musk and then Ghislaine Maxwell, like 2 feet, 3 feet behind him photobombing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and trying to imply like, you know, there's some connection there when you look at it, like, clearly he doesn't even know she's in the photo.
Yeah. And yeah, look, they were socialites. They were out there. They were shaking hands. They were taking pictures at, you know, of various different functions. It's really when you go to the island and people who are suing in civil court for to get damages because the government couldn't bring criminal prosecutions against them say like, oh, I myself viewed the following orgies with underage women in the Bahamas. Like, that's something that matters, especially when they're, you know, elites that have a lot of sway in this world.
Yeah. I think I've said this. I don't know if I've said the public. Yeah, I met Epstein before.
And, whoa.
Not on the island. Let me be very clear. If you're involved in scientists or stuff like this, you know, there was a point where met him, talked to him, couldn't quite figure out. There was something off about him. He was a guy that was very... I realized later on, because I had to go, what do you do? He goes, oh, I have a black box trading fund, whatever. And he was actually describing some other, he basically just ripped off the biography. So I didn't know that at the time, but I'm like, it was weird. He just seemed like another one of these kind of blowhard kind of guys that likes to try to look wealthy and tanned and whatnot. But
which by the way, is about 12 to 15% of all South Florida. That guy, that exact guy, a tan person who wants to act more rich than he is. That's like a sizable, a measurable on the census part of the Tri-County South Florida area. They're on the loose out there.
Yeah. Yeah. 2024 predictions.
Ooh. Is Artemis supposed to go to the moon this year? If the answer is yes, then my answer is no.
So you are taking the under.
I'm taking the under.
Yeah, point 0.5 Artemis missions to the moon. Brian is submitting his ticket, and it is under.
Yeah, let's see. The next scheduled Artemis mission is...
Drum roll, please.
I mean, I know it's not this year. SLS Block,
okay,
1B is scheduled to launch 2028.
Whoa.
SLS Block 2,
okay,
after 2029. So
okay, so
well,
start holding your breath.
Brian's already got the first winning prediction of the year.
here's an annual one for us. Do we expect Starship to fly past the Kármán line and get back safely?
I always try to take the overly optimistic.
By the way, I want to be optimistic as well.
Yeah, and I always try to take the overly optimistic thing. I think they're scheduled like the next month or so to try something.
Is it public information how many starships have been made or the rate at which they're being made? We talked about it comparing it to Boeing aircraft a while ago.
Imagine Daffy Duck. So, the thing is because the yard, there's so many cameras aimed there, they can see when these things are being built. Elon had said that they're working on V2 of it, basically after their launches. The ones they're building now are Starship V2 with some different changes for it. So I know that they're trying to do... I heard a thing that I didn't quite understand because they said they're going to try to try to like next one is going to try to do some experiment with refueling, but I'm like, we kind of got to get it into the air first.
I mean, they've gotten it into the air.
Well, into orbit. Sorry. Yeah.
Into the air.
All the way up.
Super and, plus yeah. air.
Well, out of the air. Get it away from
Get
the
it
air.
Away. afuera.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I know that, you know, they have their own pace, but I've heard that they were looking to try to do a new launch early this year. So,
Andrew, I promise you I have no pies in my arsenal. If you wanted to place a bet in 2024, do you think they cross the Kármán line and make it back safely in a starship?
People are just...
Just SpaceX, like, robotically?
Yeah, Yeah, I would be surprised if they don't land one this year. I'd be surprised. Is the SpaceX is got a ton of money. They've got, you know, they're the most, the thing to think about SpaceX is not just the leading launch provider right now. Their launch, the amount of stuff they put into orbit by mass is greater than the rest of the world combined.
Jeez Louise.
So, they've got a very viable machine for releasing rockets, they have money coming in. They picked up, there is a Europe, just the ESA, European Space Agency, just released this, like the year of the booster or something to talk about this. And the one thing they didn't mention was the rocket they had to use to get the Galileo space probe into orbit, which was a SpaceX booster because their own booster wasn't ready. Amazon wants to do their own, I think their Kuiper, you know, satellite array, their own sort of like for internet. And they were going to use Blue Origin.
Yep.
And they finally said, you know, I know we want to use the boss's rocket company, but we're kind of facing corporate malfeasance if we don't use the actual company putting things into orbit instead of waiting. So that was a bitter pill for them to have to swallow, was Kuiper, which was the Amazon project, to go to SpaceX in a contract with them to put stuff into orbit, because that's how viable. So my point is to say they've got a ton of money, ton of engineering talent. They can keep throwing more resources at this, and they keep making progress. You look at the rate of progress for Starship, for a program that was really started just a few years ago comparatively to the SLS, that what we've seen it do and its capabilities just, it seems to be at a great pace, you know, and like, you know, and that's, I would say it's hard, because it's like, you know, when NASA had done studies, feasibility studies on reusability of upper stages and lower stages, they've had a lot of brilliant people. There was a period of time for decades where the smartest people in aerospace were, you know, for the most part, all at NASA. You know, if you didn't want to work on war machines, you went there. And so they did a lot of great research on stuff. But, you know, NASA's got multiple problems working against it. One is, you know, to get funding in the way that our political system works is they've got to throw that funding at select companies. Like SLS was not like an open submission for, hey, help us build something to put stuff into orbit. It was literally help us build a rocket that uses a space shuttle engine and a Saturn V technology or whatever. And well, I wonder who's going to win that one, you know? Point is that there is, SpaceX is a great position where they can make mistakes. They can try things. And even traditional space companies too, you know, like ULA, Tony Bruno, who runs ULA, they were supposed to have their Vulcan rocket take off. And Elon Musk had famously said like 5 years ago, says, if they run a national defense payload by 2023, I'll eat my hat with mustard, you know, yeah. And safe completely. Yeah, they didn't. And Bruno and them were like, oh, no. And it's like, man, it's hard. It's hard. So my point is, yeah, I think that the fact that they're keeping things launched, I think they're going to get something up.
Justin, you got a prediction?
Predictions. I wholeheartedly believe there'll be a presidential election.
Okay, all right. Actually, can you chime in on the current...
That is kind of a bold prediction, according to some, Justin.
I know.
Actually, here's the real question. Will everybody agree who is president on election night?
No.
Yeah, I agree.
No.
And we never have in the last 20 plus years. We've never agreed.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, the 2000. I mean, it's funny. Like, I watched this, the election denial. I'm like, where were you in 2000? Like we were,
I went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
man.
2000 was protracted.
There were mainstream journalists that insisted it still was robbed. Like, and that was like we've never had this point where we all, good job, best guy won, move on. That
you
want
to know
existed.
What? Now, I'm trying to think, because 04, I remember John Edwards going out and telling their crowd to go home, and they conceded the next morning. 2016, Hillary did the same. I think McCain might have conceded to Obama, and Romney conceded to Obama in 08 and 12.
But I'm not talking about the candidates. I'm talking about the media and that and what happened.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, as far as the media goes, sure. Like, I mean, there's been disconnect, but I'm just talking about like whether or not people have conceded.
Yeah, I meant that even after Hillary conceded, there was the long, well, we could still fight it in Congress.
Oh,
there
sure. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, no. That is old hat. It is very much old hat. I don't know. What I do think is something that we should correct, because I don't think that it builds in... it builds in confidence into the system, is having the election be something that, as far as any outside observers, cannot be called until like days or weeks afterward. I think that is corrosive. And obviously, if it's something extraordinarily close, which was the Florida election, or the election that tilted on Florida in 2000, that was, statistically a fraction of America's populace that did wind up deciding it. That's something I think, okay, special circumstances if it's like that, but where multiple states can't get their act together. Hopefully it's better than it was in 2020, but I don't have a lot of faith that it's going to be much better than it was in 2020, considering how many states spun up a lot of mail counting operations that they were not prepared for, and they still haven't corrected it, a lot of them.
Yeah. I kind of have a prediction that goes beyond this year. So back in 2019, there was let's see if I can share this video with you all. Back in 2019, OpenAI, before the release of GPT-3, they had a robotics division. And one of the things the robotics division had worked on was basically using a thing called reinforcement learning, which is letting the machine learn by itself. And the idea that instead of you trying to program in a specific movement or something like this, you give it a goal, you let it try to get close to the goal, and then as it kind of gets better at that, eventually over time, it learns. And it's the same way you think about how GPT-3s work, where basically it's able to do deep learning. It'll learn how to understand stuff. The same thing can be applied with movement. And so
we try to build robots that learn a little bit like humans.
Oh, you know what? Sorry, we got competing audio happening right now.
What we've done is trained.
They built a robotic hand. And the thing about this robotic hand was they gave it the task of basically, like, it already knew the algorithm for solving the Rubik's Cube, but it had to figure out how to move the Rubik's Cube, basically how to figure out how to manipulate it. And so there's sensors in the fingertips, and you watch it as it bounces it around and moves it around. It starts to learn and figure out how to get the feedback to it. And basically they built, a robotic hand. And I've seen a hand at the OpenAI, offices, but they built a hand that could actually do this. Eventually, once they realized GPT-3, they wanted to focus on that. That team became a big part of the API team. But this was a really interesting, and this has continued to progress. Boston Dynamics and other people have worked on their own versions of this. So basically, you know, how can you use computers? How can you use AI to basically do dexterous things? And we just saw, you know, here, the thing about this was they tried to do it. That's Wojciech. That was the guy who worked on Codex. You see it here. It's solving the thing while they're throwing all these distractors on the hand. They're tickling the hand. They're moving things in front of it. And this shows you the strength of a learning algorithm. And basically, a learning algorithm can get very good at even moving things in the material world. So fast forward, and, you know, we have, did you see the latest version of Tesla's Optimus Prime robot?
No. I know that they have developed the robot more, and I did see the, it sounded like a kind of a cheap pop of like a the, whatever, something, something trail of blood factory robot thing that felt silly. But tell me about this.
So they've been working on their robot. The thing is robotics, like some of the things you'll see, like you watch it walk, they're algorithms. They're like specific algorithms for walking and other mechanics and stuff. And it's if you know a little about it, you'll see stuff and you recognize scale. And that was when they showed their first version of the robot. People are like, that's a very old algorithm. That's an old walking method. Come on, guys. And I've made the argument, like Tesla's got some of the best engineers in the world. And now this is, and I said, they're going to adapt fast. This is their new robot. This is the generation two.
Good Lord. That is smooth.
What a difference.
Yeah. We're watching the robot walk through a Cybertruck assembly plant, and it's 30% faster than what it was before. It's still got that kind of like arthritic walk, but it's better. It's a little more upright right now.
I mean, that's fine. As long as it's safe, it's like it can be slow as long as it runs all day, every day.
I'll tell you what, more and more, I appreciate it. I feel seen.
walking that way.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Fam, I see you, Jake Sully.
They're showing it now. It's picking up eggs, and it's moving an egg from one hand to the next. And, you know, that's kind of a big deal. You know, that's a big point of dexterity. And the thing that we're at is that we're going to see, I think in robotics, we are going to see the idea that I think all of us here probably work with ChatGPT on a regular daily basis and probably get engaged in conversations and back and forth. It is good enough now to do a lot of stuff. When I code, it is good enough to just code and work with. When we start, systems start to get more, and even you could do a lot more to make GPT-4 even more capable. Like we're finding, like we talked about, Gemini had their benchmarks, then Microsoft worked on some new prompts, and all of a sudden GPT-4 was beating Gemini. It will go back and forth. But anyhow, when you talk about getting to a next level, like a GPT-5 or whatever could come next, that's when it gets spooky. But the material side of it is where things have been lacking. We haven't seen the same rate of progression with robotics. And that's my prediction. My prediction is that for the next few years, robots are going to get, because a couple factors, more attention, more money thrown at it, because now we know we have the computers that can manage it. I could take one of these smaller GPT knockoff, whatever, or open source models, run it on some local hardware and have a thing. I could have a conversation with it and understand what I want. Algorithmically, the idea that you might just need a few janky motors and a couple gyroscopes, and the AI will figure out how to balance it, make it walk without having to put $50,000 worth of sensors into it, that becomes a possibility too.
I 100% believe it. It is astonishing how I've not invested in a lot of different things, but I have paid a fair bit of attention to the OpenAI system or whatever, and there I bought a Apple iPhone specifically because you told me that you used the action button to go straight to ChatGPT. And I have found myself doing fast calculus of which will take less time for me to find. I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on another podcast, but which will take more time for me to find where the power button is on this Zoom F6 or whatever, or to just say, I'm holding this, where's the power button? And then and it cut. As dumb as that 20 seconds was, it spared me of it, and I just find myself doing it more and more. And I'm fascinated to see how many people still haven't realized how many little shortcuts they can do for their life.
Our friend Andrew Heaton on a big road trip back from Oklahoma said that he just learned from chat. He just had a conversation the entire way. Instead of listening to a podcast or an audiobook, he just talked to ChatGPT on his through his car about learning about whatever he wanted to learn about. He was listening to a book, had a thought, and instead of saying, "Oh, I got to remember to look that up," just had a conversation with ChatGPT. Which, granted, you should double check before you use that information for anything other than, you know, chatting with your friends. But still, that's really cool.
I think I already mentioned this, and I apologize if I'm repeating, but during the Christmas holiday, there was like an hour-long drive, and I needed to entertain my 10-year-old at the time, and I was just like, what would it look like to stand on the surface of Io and, you know, describe for me a vivid visual scape of what it would be like? And, 30 years of reading up on all this stuff, as far as I know, it was accurate on all that stuff. It's like, oh, you'd see a little bit of atmosphere. You'd see the sky would be dominated by the visage of Jupiter and all that stuff. And it was like a custom podcast. It was wonderful storytelling at the time.
It only gets better in a few years' time, substantially better from here, which is awesome and terrifying. That is, you know, as I sit there and I have conversations and stuff back and forth with it, and I'm like, and I think I maybe said this before, but I'll say this again. So when they were developing the mode right now, the conversation mode, I was involved in that. And then I went to weekly meetings where they're showing the progress updates on it and had my dumb suggestions. But watching the improvements of that, of being in the room the first time,
yeah,
that was demonstrated, where all of a sudden, like, hey, back and forth, and it knew what to wait for the beats and stuff, was amazing to sort of watch this, have the conversation and respond back and go forth, and then going up to the comms team and showing people there. And then fast forward a week or so ago, my wife is, you know, getting ready for bed, brushing her teeth, whatever. So I'm in the bedroom and I grab my phone and I decide I'm going to have a conversation, start talking to it about memory methods. And I'm talking back and forth. And I was there watching it getting better and better and better. And I was still sitting there staring at my phone as I had this conversation with an AI and just was beside myself. Was just spooked out too. So Dr. Chiron, 2024 prediction. Some in the AI industry will claim they reached AGI, yet they did not.
Ha! That's a perennial. That's every year.
Well, but who?
Well, what I don't think anyone's ever claimed it.
Oh, yeah. What credible org's ever claimed it? Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about individual people, like the Google guy who is convinced that that it was a sentient being.
Guy that didn't even know how the stuff worked. That was why that guy was given any credibility drove me nuts. I don't want to dismiss that. I would say though that what is AGI? How do you define AGI?
Yeah.
And I will. We talk about people talk about the Turing test, and it is one of the most misunderstood things, because if you read Alan Turing's paper and what he was trying to describe. He was talking about how do you measure intelligence, and not consciousness, not sentience. He was talking about intelligence. How do you know if you're talking to another intelligent being? How do you know this? And he's like, well, if we're on the other side of a terminal and we're going back and forth, and whatever question I ask it or whatever, if it satisfies my understanding of what it means to be intelligent, then in fairness, I have to say that thing is intelligent. And it became intelligence got conflated with, you know, sentience and consciousness and whatnot. And literally his point was trying to say, if you're trying to understand what intelligence is, then you have to be able to have a definition of it that can work when you don't get to see who's on the other side of it. And that was it. There was a paper that came out like, ChatGPT can't pass the Turing test. I'm like, well, what you're saying is a model that was trained to tell you it's not a human succeeded in telling people it's not a human. Yes. If you're telling me you don't think a GPT-4 level model could pass that test with most people,
should it be weaponized for scamming
are currently doing a better job at walking you through customer service? Like,
right. Yeah.
This is happening now.
I don't even mean weaponized. If you in Turing's test, he didn't imagine that, you know, we would try to put into rules into AI that has to tell you it's an AI. The fact that it says, because we put a rule in it, says it tells you it's an AI, you go, aha, it can't pass. I'm like, that's kind of a technicality there. Like, if you're telling me, does it satisfy your understanding of what intelligence is? I would say that most people, yes, absolutely these things are intelligent. Absolutely these things are intelligent. You know, what that means beyond it, you know, an ant colony is intelligent. You know, there's all kinds of emergent intelligence there.
Slime mold is intelligent.
Yeah, yeah. I wish slime mold could, you know, help me with my Python programming, but not yet. But yeah, I think that's the thing that people get kind of hung up on that. I would say that we look at the rate at which these systems are getting better. And so what is AGI? And that, you know, we use the term at OpenAI, ASI, artificial superintelligence, is something that exceeds human capacity. The definition we use of AGI is something that could do most work, most knowledge work a person could do more efficiently than a person. Because the idea is, if you can have a $5 billion data center that can do the work of one lawyer, that's not efficient. You know, that's not really, even by the way some lawyers charge. But if you can basically, you know, at 28 cents an hour for GPU usage, you're able to do what an average knowledge worker can do. That's the point. So, you know, when will we reach AGI? I don't know. The goalposts will keep moving.
Well, here's what doesn't keep moving. Patreon.com/weirdthings. It's where you can support this podcast. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your patience over the holidays. Obviously, a lot of travel and stuff. But we are back, friends. We are back. And we are happy to be here. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Gentlemen, so we think robots. We think spooky robots walking around.
I'm very much of the belief that we are at the dawning of the next great epic of tech. That we spent a lot of time iterating on the last great one, which I think was smartphones. And that was obviously launching on top of the internet. But between stuff like AI and what AI can mean for like robotics, I think that we're going to be at a point like we were in the late 80s, early 90s with the internet, and like we were in the 2000s with the rise of smartphones and how much that just revolutionized society and culture. I think we're here. We're here again. We've had a lot of false knocks at the door, but we're back, baby. We're so back.
Let me tell you what robotics really means. The idea of getting robotics to the state of it's doing construction, other stuff. There is a lot of talent in this world. The problem is talent is distributed unevenly. And sometimes to develop more talent, you need a long-term plan. If you want to have a developing economy in the global South, if you want to have, you know, if you want to have more skilled electricians in Indonesia, you need more vocational schools. You need these sort of things to build it. And it's just hard. But, you know, imagine you have, you know, 500 Gen 5 Tesla bots with, you know, a GPT-5 directing them, and a bunch of construction materials, and you're able to build a vocational school in a matter of days, or build a hospital with robot staff to assist humans who are going to be running the thing. Cause you always want to have humans at the center of it, even if they're just saying yeah or nay, or got their hand on an off switch. But that's going to be kind of, you know, I think the goal. But you start to think about, like, you know, we watch the Mr. Beast videos where they go to these areas out in the remote, you know, parts of, you know, Africa, and are able to, you know, build solar panels, provide Wi-Fi, provide things that we take for granted. that, you know, we've been lucky because of the geography, economy, whatever, to have the density or whatever, to have these things, and the economic system allows for that. Other people haven't. And then you say, okay, you know, how do you make this easier? You know, poured concrete was a wonderful innovation. The ability of having poured concrete and understand how to make that work in mass, you know, allowed us to build cities and steel and things like this. And so you think about robotics, it just the idea of, I really think about what it can give to the people who don't have the resources we have. And that's exciting, you know? And so I think that we could see a major economic boost by basically being able to develop infrastructure around the world. And part of infrastructure isn't just building the things, it's also building the vocational schools, the educational institutions, and that, so the people who live there, you know, get to.
Are better. Yeah, their lives are materially bettered. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Not just because that's the, to me, any future where it involves just throwing handouts to somebody else is a scary future, because, you know, one day, you know, I find myself just sitting there consuming all day long, and what then? So, but I think a lot about like how robotics could make that. You think about too, like, you know, my parents are getting older. You know, would, you know, having a really capable robot around the house.
Robot parents.
Yeah. That too.
My parents are getting older. I'm not a fan. They're kind of older models. I'd like maybe some with some cool red stripes. I was reading a magazine about cooler parents.
Hey, robot dad, do a backflip. Whoa.
Do you guys have picks?
Yeah.
All right, well, here, while you are clearly thinking of one, I'll double down on A Clockwork Orange, specifically the English version that is an audiobook. With the weird kind of, you know, moving on chapter. That's cool. Also, Lower Decks
that, Brian.
Continues to be good.
My pick is going to be, I don't know how many more episodes are in this season, but the new Fargo is my favorite edition of the series thus far. It's electric. It's awesome. Juno Temple, who played the model from Ted Lasso, Keeley, is against type amazing in this. Joe Keery from Stranger Things is awesome in it, and John Hamm. You know, John Hamm is a weird actor because Don Draper was so iconic. I feel like people have just been casting him in either weird versions of Don Draper or John Hamm on SNL because they realized he was funny and he can play smarmy well.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great, great role and allows him to be menacing and sinister in a very human way, in a way that reminds you, part of that Don Draper formula was he was kind of scary. Like, he had this past.
Well, he had that darkness about him,
right? There was something where it's like, you know, if there was a Mad Men plot line where Don Draper got angry and drunk at a bar and wound up beating somebody up, and then he wound up dying, you'd be like, yeah, that kind of fits. Like, there's an element of that. I don't think he would intentionally kill somebody, but I do think he would be angry enough.
Remember the Korean War start thing, implied when he shows up.
Yeah, anyway, this is phenomenal. And if it ends where I think it's going to end, they have set up a lot of things that I feel like is building to a finale. It will be it would be something that I have not seen explored in a heightened creative way that Fargo obviously exists in. This Coen-esque, the characters are real. They're so real that they can do sort of weird things and you read them as a part of humanity and not a cartoon. And that's always the greatest thing about the Coens' work and Noah Hawley, for whatever. Sometimes he can get a little indulgent, and he has in the past. This is the perfect frequency between the two. I cannot co-sign on this season of Fargo more than I have.
Excellent. So I have some, man, I've been trying, but I can't. Monarch Legacy of Monsters, like, I was very excited because it was one of these things that there's a lot of really good talent that was attached to it. But sometimes when you see too many names attached to something, you start to realize, like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, Monarch, I don't know if you've been watching that, but like.
It's a TV show. Where is it?
It is Apple Big Budget. Apple Big Budget Monarch. It is the Godzilla universe. And it's about Monarch, the organization. It's got Kurt Russell. It is probably one of the most expensive shows on TV. And it's got Godzilla in it and whatnot. And the fact that you're. Don't know what it is tells you that's not got a lot of word of mouth because it's not been great. And it's been a frustrating watch because there's this drama of these young people looking for their dad that's like goes on episode after episode. And I don't care about them. I want the monsters to eat them and just get back to Kurt Russell and Godzilla.
Just for clarification, I isn't there another Godzilla something or other, like 1948 or
Godzilla Minus One?
Yeah,
that movie that is out, and that is a Toho Japanese produced movie about baby Godzilla,
right?
And,
proto before he gets juiced up.
Yeah,
before he starts.
Everybody loves that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, the example, that was a $15 million budget, which is probably the budget for at least, I mean, one episode of this is probably that. And it's just this late, there's this, I could go on about my frustration with a lot of Hollywood screenwriters and writers' rooms and stuff and how stuff gets made. But, you know, there is, I would say on one hand, there is very much an argument to be made for having one passionate person driving this thing instead of a committee. But then I watched Rebel Moon, and then maybe I really want a committee because, oh my God.
Okay, a quick side jag. Take me through the whoopsie doodles in that one.
What, Rebel Moon?
Yeah, because I didn't see it.
It's Zack Snyder wrote and directed it and does DP on it. I mean, Zack Snyder, by all accounts, is a super nice guy. I have friends who are friends with him. Seems like a nice guy. But, I mean, this is a... Everything, like, I know you like Man of Steel, but like my problem Man of Steel is like I never got a scene in Man of Steel. I got montage.
Yeah,
this is literally it's funny because they go like, it's like, you know, Magnificent Seven or, you know, the Seven Samurai, you know, like it's like that, you know, it's like gathering the team together, okay, which I'm like, yeah, that was Battle Beyond the Stars in the 1970, like 8 or 9 movie, which was the one where they had the Star Wars knockoff of trying to get this team together to go fight things. How much it borrows, people that rips off Star Wars, like, no, it rips off Battle Beyond the Star Wars, another Star Wars ripoff. But it literally, Snyder had wanted to do a Star Wars film and pitch Lucasfilm a Star Wars film. They turned it down. And so basically, apparently, he went to Netflix and says, I have a great idea for a big space fiction franchise and series and stuff, which was really his wannabe Star Wars film. There's literally somebody in there with lightsabers. And it's a movie where, like, everything's flashbacks or what the main character core are, like, you find out her story because she's at a campfire. Says, you should probably know this about me. Flashback, slow motion montage. And now you know. If you're like, am I invested in this?
Yeah.
There's this, you know, like, remember like the scene in Justice League where they're all standing up in a row and the camera passes by and it's like this poster moment. And you're like, what is the storytelling here?
What are
and
they looking
tons
at?
Tons of that. Yeah, like she had this very Thanos-like relationship with the bad guy who, you know, took over her world and adopted her because she had spirit. And then, you know, she became a big fighter for him. And then there's a scene where they show her standing on top of a hill with a flag for the evil empire and it's slow-mo. And I'm like, that's like the Iwo Jima flag thing, but that meant something because that was like taking the island from the imperialist Japanese, which was a moment of, like, what? How am I supposed to? What? Why? You're just filled with this going like literally a movie made from. I made a movie once based on storyboards and the plot sucked. And it was literally, it's like, this will be a cool shot. This will be, you know, she's out there in the field and we're going to have this big ringed planet behind her. And then there, it just, everything feels like a blue screen set. Ugh. It is So I guess my point is, like, I don't know. Like, I give the right people the money.
I think I've gotten a bit of a sketch about what I didn't miss.
It is. My dad, like, I did not want to watch it. And we're spending Christmas with my dad. And my dad's like, do you guys want to watch Rebel Moon? I'm like, I'm not going to watch that. And I'm like, it's my dad. You know, my dad wants to watch this movie. My dad likes everything. And I'm like, I'll watch it with you, Dad. It took us two nights to get through it. And it is. I like him as a person. I like him as, I love his energy. I have wanted to root for something. It is not, he's not a director that I'm like, eh. I'm like, I like the guy. You know, he seems to be a great guy. People worked on set with him, like him, you know? I just... Nolan has been friends with him, and Nolan will say these things that you read, like, oh, Nolan endorses that. I'm like, read it closely. That's the guy rooting for the person he likes, but not saying I'm going to have a conversation of film theory with him. But anyhow, so Rebel Moon, I'm extremely frustrated. And I have a theory, which I shared with you before. Like, I suspect, because you see this in Rotten Tomatoes isn't really a reliable source, because like, the studios know how to game it, and also angry fans know how to game it.
Yeah.
People who don't like a thing, it is this push and pull, and there's stuff on there. You're like, I never look at the critic scores now, because it's like,
well, and also that mattered when we had a lot of critics for whom their careers mattered based on their opinions. And we just don't have that anymore. The entire infrastructure for what used to make that job a thing that you would really care about is just kind of gone.
Here's how I look at a Rotten Tomatoes. I look at the audience score, and this is how I look at the audience score. I go, are non-fans watching it? If non-fans are watching this, I'll put a lot of value into the score. If I know the only people that showed up to go watch that are the fans, then I'm not so much into it. But I can tell me something like, you know, I've never watched the One Piece cartoon.
Yeah. Right?
And I'll hear all things about One Piece, One Piece, One Piece. And I watch it the first 10 minutes. My wife's like, it's a bit goofy. I'm like, yeah, but I'm kind of into it. We finished it. Loved the live action One Piece. Loved it. And you guys watch it?
No, not yet.
I have not, no.
Oh, it's delightful. Delightful. And it was just showed you, like, you look at after Cowboy Bebop, people are like, Netflix should never be allowed to do any live action adaptations again. And then... because they did everything wrong with that. Like, you couldn't even make it to the first 5 minutes because the pacing and stuff. And I like love John Cho. I think that would have been a great casting for a different point in Cowboy Bebop's career.
Yeah. You
know? But anyhow, that being said, I do have a pick. I do have a pick.
Go.
Something that I dismissed outright that I'm like, I don't like. It's, I don't like. And I blame maybe part of the description of it, whatever. But man, I really enjoyed this. They did two seasons of this. I hope they do another one. Britt Marling and Baj, forget his last name, The OA. Have you watched The OA?
Wachowski's?
No. This was Britt Marling co-wrote this with Zal Batmanjali. Sorry for mispronouncing his name. They've done a few. She has co-written a number of really interesting sort of sci-fi stuff. And so she did a movie once called The Sound of My Voice, and then kind of picked up some of those themes here, I think, in that and this and The OA. And basically, the premise is a blind girl goes missing, shows up several years later, and can now see.
Oh, I think we reported on this on Cord Killers before it came out, but I don't know that I ever saw it.
Well, I recommend it. They took kind of a premise they did from, I think, Sound of My Voice a bit, but I really dug this. And they did season one and season two. They did a really tight season two, and where it ends, like, I can't wait for you to watch this because it's effing cool. And I will tell you the conceit is like, I would say the thing that made me hesitate, because like when they say, oh, is their story true or is it not true or whatever, like, yeah, no, it's a science fiction film. It's an effort science fiction show. So it's not, I hate that, like, oh, the Martian child. Like, I don't want to spend 2 hours to wait for you to tell me if this thing is, you know, real or not. Like, I want to get invested. Good science fiction to me is like, what if this thing is true? And so VOA, I really dug it.
Cool.
They compared it to Stranger Things, which I get why, but it's an unfavorable sort of comparison. But it is I put it in like the category of like Severance or whatnot, or like Homecoming. Are you okay. See Homecoming?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way, Homecoming was great.
Way better than Homecoming. Better than Homecoming. Homecoming is really well done. I couldn't get it. I hadn't started to, yeah, but like, again, I like this. Big fan. Gentlemen?
Yeah.
It's been weird.
Now I'm going to fade it out so I don't have to edit. Look at that.
Oh, I got this.
I was delighted.
Oh, no, you talked over it. I have to edit it now.